WAER Sports proudly presents the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
Goalpost goes down for just the seventh time in program history. Syracuse football has secured a top 10 win in the Dome.
Freeman straight away elevates and slams. Ladies and gentlemen, Donnie Freeman is here in the 315.
And it's misery at the hands of Maryland. Syracuse with its closest shot at a championship in over a decade gets sent home.
Hearing from a host of guests.
Super excited to welcome back onto the podcast the voice of Syracuse men's lacrosse, Tim Leonard.
Now Jason Benetti, voice of the Detroit Tigers.
And providing all the hot takes.
If Syracuse beats Miami, there are no questions. This program is headed in the right direction. Fran Brown is the leader of the future.
These are guys that can make impacts on day one. You're going to see that presence. That just when Syracuse in the past, when you look at their offensive line and defensive line, they were undersized in committing penalties. Now, they might still commit penalties. Who knows? But at least you know they're not going to be undersized.
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast, and it starts right now.
Welcome in to the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. We have an exciting one today. You know, there's a lot of things been going around on the Hill. Syracuse men's basketball has gotten some transfers in and lost some players, returned some players as well. It'll be an interesting next couple days. Recording this on Thursday morning. We have some more women's basketball news. A lot of players entering the transfer portal, more so than staying. And then obviously men's lacrosse coming off a tough loss to North Carolina. Women's lacrosse still on a roll, 11 games in the win column after three straight losses. The weather's been, you know, up and down. We got snow a couple days ago, Josh. How's that weather treating you? And, you know, how's life in general?
Oh, life is great. You know, it's Thursday. It's the first day in the Masters, so it really can't get much better than that. Yeah, as far as the weather, I think it's been pretty good. It's been a little bit colder the last couple days. You know, Sunday and Monday weren't particularly warm, but you know, I think we're rounding out this cold stretch here. I think the snow is hopefully done for the year. You know, we'll see.
Hopefully, I think that would be nice. I saw Coach Jack put out a tweet this morning that was like she's putting the snow brush away, so maybe. Maybe hopefully that's not a jinx, because that would be bad. Let's start with some men's basketball news. I think the biggest domino, of course, was what was Donnie Freeman gonna do? Enter the draft, test the market on the portal, return to Syracuse like he did last season. And you know, I think there were some reports earlier this week that he was going to enter, and Kentucky is a school to watch. And so when he finally did enter the portal officially on Tuesday, then it was like, all right, that's not really a shock. I wasn't surprised. I was a little disappointed. I think, you know, obviously Donnie's a very talented player, and I think someone that you would like Syracuse to bring back in an ideal world.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it really surprised anyone. I think, you know, there was rumblings about how much money he was looking for, and you know, it just really doesn't make sense for a team that's trying to kind of reestablish its own culture to spend that much money on. And you know, Donnie was a fine player. I thought, you know, I think he had some injuries and he had his ups and downs certainly, but you know, I think he's still a very talented player. And obviously when you put him with some other high level players, I think he's going to be successful and one of those SEC schools that's probably going to be on the prowl for him is going to be extremely lucky to have him. It's kind of unfortunate, right? I mean, you kind of looked at 2 years ago, the roster versus last year, and you thought last year was, you know, really going to be a pretty impressive roster. I mean, they bring in a high-end point guard in Nate George. Donnie and JJ both, you know, kind of a cinematic return, and the fact that it was, you know, kind of stalled out. We didn't know if they were going to come back, and then they both announced jointly together they're coming back. You get Kai Anthony, you get Sadiq White. You know, last year's roster shaping up to be pretty impressive, and you know, it just wasn't the case. So I think the fact that, you know, just kind of a wash in general was kind of the, you know, push factor. These guys needed to mostly get out, and then you just returned the two big names, Griffin, Kyan and Sadiq. You got them both back. So that's really the most important thing is you get those two guys back for another year, and those can kind of be the foundation for this year's team.
Yep, we found out yesterday that Kyan would come back, and then earlier in the day, Sadiq as well. And I think obviously those are the two biggest names that I think the fans wanted to come back, like you mentioned, Josh. It's interesting though, because when you look at, you know, what maybe the best players on Syracuse last season, there were times where Kyan early in the season, more so, showed that he could really compete and make an impact. There was times where we wanted him in the starting lineup over JJ. I'll say we hesitantly because I was not really on that train. But and then Sadiq White showed flashes of a really good player and having that potential. So being able to retain both of those guys is pretty nice. The only thing that I guess not scared me, but when you look at the rest of this roster that's forming, Gavin Doty's a big name, obviously. Played at Siena last year, averaged 17 points. So when you have a guy like that who's coming, will bring some experience, put up 21 points against Duke, that's good. And then we got Triple M. You know, who's Triple M, you're asking? That's the nickname we're coining him. No 3M. I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name. I don't know, Josh, if you want to go at it.
Mark Morano Mamutovic.
That's probably right. Probably right. We'll get a, you know, once everything becomes confirmed, he'll make his way to campus. We'll get an official pronunciation out there for you.
Guy
But
can shoot the ball.
Triple M, he averaged some good numbers in the European leagues, playing for,
Eurobasket.
yeah, exactly, playing for Slovenia. So who knows? So, I mean, obviously Syracuse has had a track record of trying to get international guys the past couple of seasons. Hasn't worked. Luke Fennell entered the transfer portal. Peter Majstorovic entered the transfer portal a season ago, back in the transfer portal after a good year at Long Beach State. Shout out to Peter Majstorovic. But when you look at the number of guys in the portal, yeah, I mean,
Oh,
they're
dude, there's like over a
more than
thousand.
half. Yeah,
It's
like
unbelievable.
more than half the amount of players in college basketball are in the transfer
It's
portal.
unbelievable.
But, and then you see the figures that are getting thrown around. I mean, $3 to $4 million for a good big man.
Yeah,
How?
I've seen Badunga and Aiden Sherrill both gonna go for 5 million and over. I mean, that just doesn't feel right. It feels ridiculous. How are you as a mid-level Power Five conference team, how are you supposed to allocate over half of your team's funds to secure one player? I mean, even in the NFL and the NBA, no team allocates more than 50% of their money to grab one player. It's just not right. And what are we doing?
Well, it won't happen. And that's why the schools like Duke and Texas Tech, who has oil money and other random schools that have deep pockets, are going to get these guys. And a team like Syracuse is going to struggle. It'll be interesting to see who they get. Syracuse also announced four members of its coaching staff. And I think the one that Syracuse fans are looking at to kind of maybe bring some guys with them is Jamal Brunt, former associate head coach at Penn State. Caden Mingo, who was a freshman last season, top 40 recruit, according to some outlets, played pretty well. 12 and a half points, a steal and a half, ranked up there in the Big Ten in steals. So he'll be a guy that I guess will be linked to Syracuse. Can Syracuse get a guy of that stature? Who knows? And that's what's the interesting part, is I think I had the assumption that everything was going to move fast. I don't know why. I guess we should have learned from last year and just like with all these numbers flying around. I mean, think about it. These teams that are shoveling out millions of dollars, they still have to get that money. Like if they're promising that money, that means they have to have it. And Syracuse could have an NIL budget of 10, $11 million, which I think would everyone would be pleased about. But what if they only have seven right now and they're still trying to get more? So that is the thing where it's going to be tricky. I think even if the transfer portal closes in a week or two, you could see some guys get signed after that. It'll be interesting. So just that end date is just when people have to be in the portal, so people can commit to places after. So that will be interesting in itself. Some other coaching news. Ben Lee is coming over from Siena. I think he was a guy that people really, really like, and that could have some promise, potentially, whether that be a head coach somewhere else or really help the squad. Ryan Daly, coached assistant coach at VCU, played at St. Joseph's and was a really, really good player back in just before COVID. Also spent time at Bryant as an assistant coach. And the last name, a name that Syracuse fans should know, Arinze Onuwaku, who obviously played here, coached at Siena last year, and has some high school ties as well to recruiting. So that will be interesting. We should get some more recruiting commitments, transfer portal news by the end of next week for our next podcast. But what if in your eyes, like, what is the last thing that Syracuse needs? Not the last thing, they need plenty of things, but like, where do you want to see Syracuse go from here?
I mean, I think it's hard to have expectations, especially at this point in the cycle. There's only like, I don't know, 40 to 50 players actually committed out of like 1,300 people that are in the portal. Jamal Brunt coming over here is opens the door to, possibly kind of being a little bit expansive here. And I do like our chances with bringing over Caden Mingo, who played at the same high school as Kyan Anthony. And not only Caden Mingo, but his five-star brother Dylan Mingo,
That would be
who
something.
was committed to North Carolina, is still kind of committed to North Carolina. Maybe he decommitted. There's a lot of talk about what's going on there. He has expressed interest in playing with his brother. And when you have Jamal Brunt coming over here, and Penn State obviously not looking for a new head coach, but maybe Jamal Brunt spent some time recruiting Caden Mingo. Maybe Mingo wants to come and play with Kyan Anthony. And it's going to be a crowded backcourt if that's the case, if they get both Caden and Dylan Mingo. But I mean, if you got talent like that, I mean, Caden Mingo averaged 13, 14 points as a freshman at Penn State. Not a great roster over there, but good scorer. And I think anytime you can, kind of expand the Long Island Lutheran tree here and get several players that Kyan Anthony played in high school with, I think that's going to increase your chances, to win with this roster, right? It's still too early to tell, who else they're really going after. I think the big man is going to be a pretty big one, right now. And, you hope they don't just like bring the entire Siena roster over, because as great as Siena was, I don't think his Siena roster is going to be very competitive in the ACC, regardless of what they did in the first round against Duke.
I think strategically, like getting a guy like well, what's his name? Gavin, not Gavin. That's Gavin Doty. Getting some depth pieces from Siena is not the worst.
You talking about
Tasman
Francis
Goodrick.
Folafack?
Well, yeah, but they got the commitment from Tasman Goodrick,
Oh gosh.
who like you thinking, okay, who is this guy? He averaged 10 points, 7 rebounds last season from Siena, was injured from Australia. But I mean, when you think about, if you don't have to spend that much money on a guy and he's maybe your big man replacement of Cheffing Diarra, like I would rather spend not much money on a guy like that who GMAC knows, who could compete at the MAC levels. It's going to be probably your third string big man for Syracuse. It's better than going spending $300,000, $400,000 on someone else from the transfer portal that could never play. So I guess that's your take there. And then let's move on to women's basketball, because after Sophie Burrows departed, there were kind of question marks who else would go. We talked about Sophie Burrows, and now it's like, who else will stay? I mean, there's less names staying than there are going, Josh.
I think it's unless Felicia Legette-Jack has a master plan here to go out and recruit. I will say it's interesting. Iowa State has like half of their team in the portal too. So something in the water and stores did irreparable damage to these two teams, because I think they have a combined seven players on their rosters right now. Yeah, it's somehow it feels like they're in a worse spot than the men's team. I just don't know. I don't understand it, Griff. I really didn't expect. I mean, with Darius and Filia out, I really didn't expect there to be a mass exodus to leave. I mean, these players were going to start getting real chances at playing time. I mean, there's going to be three starting lineup spots open with Burrows transferring, Filia gone, and Darius gone. I just don't understand it. You know, I really felt like even if there was a couple that left, I don't think it should be a domino effect that you positionally lose your entire team. I mean, I don't think that should happen.
No, I was certainly shocked. It's like Sophie Burrows, okay, Matty Potts, okay. And then the numbers and the people kept going. It was like, oh wait, Shai Hawkins is going into the portal. Like, she showed some promise. Justice Fitzgerald, Camden Nelson, Jasmine Cooper, two top 100 recruits last season. Oral Almon, who did obviously didn't play a whole lot, but like it's Olivia Schmidt, Uche Azoje, and a dream at this point. So what is gonna
Hey, if
happen?
anyone could play like one on five,
Yeah, that's
I would
probably.
want Uche Azoje to be the player going up against the five.
Angelica Velez, another name that has not entered the portal. So it'll be interesting. Like, what will happen? I feel like we have trust in Coach Jack, and she's earned our trust, is I guess how we should put it. Maybe we get a star-studded duo of Audie Crooks and Uche Azoje. That would certainly be something. But who knows? Transfer portal open for women's basketball. Expect some commitments soon, hopefully. We'll have that covered as well on the Ostrom Avenue podcast next week. Now let's start talking some lacrosse. We'll touch on the women's side. We do have Lars Tiffany, head coach of UVA men's lacrosse, coming on the podcast just in a little bit, so stay tuned for that interview. But women's lacrosse, another top 20 win, this time on the road at Duke. I know Duke was ranked number 18, so maybe not the best win, but anytime you're playing an ACC team and an ACC team on the road, can't be disappointed. Went down to the wire. Really, really fun game to watch.
Did you watch it?
I watched a little bit of it.
Yeah.
It was right after the men's game. So I got home from the men's game, turned it on, and watched the final quarter-ish. But 10-9, you know, it was a little scary at one point. Emma Mochnick scored the goal 2 minutes to go. That, I guess, was the game winner. Although after the game, she was like, not really a game winner. So another credit to Syracuse's defense to held the team under 10 goals. I mean, this team's rolling. 11 straight wins.
This was a big one, on the road, obviously. Like they've been cardiac cues all year. I mean, 5-1 and two goal games or less. They've won all 3 1 goal games, and all of those coming against ranked teams. Griffin, I mean, we talk about it every week, but this team is legit. Like, I see Vera. I mean, obviously, I think they've got the second longest streak right now in women's lacrosse. I think only Maryland has a longer streak, who they kicked the season off with. Maryland is 13-0. Syracuse is 11-3. Obviously, they've won 11 straight. I mean, it feels like every game there's someone stepping up. Ashley Volpe had a hat trick in the second half, and then Emma Muchnick picks up two big goals towards the end of the game, including the game winner. I mean, you can't say enough about this team right now. I think they're really coming into each other right now. This is a really good sign. First year coach. I don't think there's many teams that are going to compete with Syracuse, you know, outside of your North Carolinas and your Northwesterns, who would love to get another crack at them. But I think right now we could be looking at them walking into the ACC tournament on a 13-game win streak. They got two more games. Notre Dame at the Dome on Saturday for the triple header extravaganza. And then the big one against BC next week. That's all they got left. And I think you like their chances in both of those games. They've proven it.
I would say so. Definitely. And it's like, they're not even just doing it at home. Like, they have good road wins. Anytime you play a New York State team on the road, it's going to be a tough game just because of that factor. You go out to Durham. It's never easy going to anywhere in North Carolina and getting a win. Northwestern getting a win there is incredibly tough. I don't care that it was inside. And then, like, your only loss right now on the road is to Stanford. And, you know, there are certain factors there that come into play. But you got to be really impressed with the way Coach Thorpe has gotten this team going. And in a year that was maybe a down year, a transition year, you could say, that's not a thing. And that's not the way, no. And that's the way it should be. For Syracuse lacrosse program, the men's or women's side, there should never be a down year or transition year. And this hopefully is the year the Syracuse women's lacrosse can go on another big run after possibly a disappointing last season. They play, you mentioned it, Notre Dame at noon to start that triple header senior day. So a lot of seniors, including Danielle Guyette, Emma Muchnick, Coco Vandiver, getting honored on Saturday. That is a noon face-off, or noon opening draw, rather. And then that leads us right into the men's game, which is after that. Syracuse honoring Coach Desko, putting him in the ring of honor against Virginia. Again, we have Coach Tiffany coming up in just a few minutes, so stay tuned for that interview. It's a really good one. Just make sure to listen. You know, obviously, Joey Spolina, Syracuse not having the best day down in Chapel Hill. It wasn't really close, and I think Syracuse was in it for a little bit in that first quarter. UNC ran away, and then they could have made it a game when Michael Leo scored at the start of that fourth quarter. But besides that, it was really all UNC. Joey Spolina, second game this season with 0 points. Not a great time to have 0 points when you're going for that record, but it was just disappointing to see Syracuse really just didn't show up.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the reason it was somewhat close, I think you're down 8-5 at halftime, was they weren't getting killed on the faceoffs, and then that wasn't the case anymore in the third quarter, kind of when UNC kind of ran away with it. They won 37% of draws. My cutoff for them to kind of be competitive, I wanted about 45%, and that just didn't happen. And Brady Wambach is just an unbelievable player. But at the same time, I really didn't feel like this was a game that was, you know, kind of defined at the faceoff X. I think the defense was just really poor. Like, all around, I thought the defense just wasn't good. You allow 6 straight goals. 15-minute offensive scoring drought's not great. But I feel like Petromala was just... I mean, he didn't even really have to work for anything. I mean, the defense just wasn't really closing out at all. I mean, I really was not impressed with the whole effort. And, you know, McCool obviously gets pulled in the third quarter. You know, I think he was being a little bit too reactionary. I feel like he was kind of guessing a little too much. And, you know, you kind of saw that, especially on that big goal run. It just felt like he was off. And it's never great when your head coach comes out after the game and, you know, kind of blames the slippery feet. Like, no one wants to hear that. Like, you just got your butts handed to you, a chance to go be the number one team in all the polls again, a game that you want to win. I mean, you want to, obviously the ACC standings are pretty meaningless with the tournament setup, but a pretty big game. You want that big road win, and your coach comes on after the game and is like, yeah, slippery, the grass field, we weren't used to it. Well, you have, like, grass fields within the perimeter of the city. So maybe you could go practice at some of the practice fields and you wouldn't be so, you know, upset after the game because you felt disadvantaged. You know, so there's stuff like that. Yeah, this game, rightfully so, North Carolina, you know, wins this one by playing better than Syracuse. But, you know, I think there was a little bit of... I didn't really agree with some of the things that were said after that game. I'll leave it at that. Definitely we're competitive, right? I mean, they had that lead in the first quarter and they kind of worked it back at the start of the fourth, but it just didn't it didn't feel like a winning product, and they deservedly lost that game.
Yeah. I was gonna crack a joke. I was like, do you want to say anything more? Is there anything more you wanted to say about this game? Because yeah, I mean, like you said, it was not pretty. I think like you mentioned, the defense didn't have a great day. I think Riley Figueres did a good job on Owen Duffy, who was held to just one goal
Yeah.
and two assists. But besides that, like if Joey Spolina is getting 0 points, it's gonna be hard for this team to win.
Yep.
And you've seen it. Syracuse's worst two games of the season, Princeton and UNC, he had 0 points. And I don't think it's necessarily his fault. I mean, of course, it is his fault. But the offense wasn't playing through him like they usually do. I don't know if that was a situational thing, if it was a matchup thing, if Syracuse had another game plan. But there was a lot of possessions where Joey didn't touch the ball. And there's a lot of turnovers, a lot of bad passes, a lot of sloppy possessions. And so that's what's going to happen if you don't play through 22. I think that's just about it. As we mentioned, Syracuse plays UVA on Saturday after the women's game. That one, the schedule could be up in the air, but it is scheduled for a 4 p.m. opening face-off. McClure remodeling countdown to face-off at 3:30. I think this is going to be a big ooh, a big game for Syracuse. Obviously, John Desko, the Ring of Honor ceremony at halftime, so the dome is going to be packed. Syracuse fans will show up. I wonder if they'll get 10,000 for this one. Wouldn't be surprised if they do.
I think they absolutely will. With spring game right after and the women's game before, this kind of being sandwiched in between. Absolutely.
And it should. And the fact that, this also should have been the game that Joey maybe crosses that 300
Still
and
can? Still can.
he still can. I think it'll be interesting. If he does, it would be pretty special. A good moment for Joey after, a rough game, obviously. It'll be interesting to see who alums are there, Maybe Rick Beardsley will be in attendance. Maybe the Powell brothers. Who knows? That will be fun, obviously. Stay tuned to WAER Sports for all coverage of that game on Twitter, at 88.3 FM. Well, it's the time of the hour. We have Virginia men's lacrosse head coach Lars Tiffany to come on the podcast, one of our favorite guests all year. It was a rough season for Virginia at the start, but they've really turned it around. So really interesting to see what Lars Tiffany says. So let's toss it to that conversation with Virginia head coach Lars Tiffany. We now have the pleasure of being joined by Virginia men's lacrosse head coach Lars Tiffany. Coach, thanks so much for joining the Ostrom Avenue podcast. It is the sixth time that you've been on the podcast now, the most of any coach just past also other ACC coach John Donowski, who just tied his fifth time on the podcast a couple weeks ago. You're now number six, the most frequent guest in terms of head coach. So thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate
I will take that honor and embrace
it.
it. I grew up in Lafayette, New York, and as I got older, I got to play on the Ostrom, the Gordie Ostrom Athletic Fields, the varsity field for football and basketball, excuse me, football and lacrosse at the Lafayette High School. So the Ostrom name is very dear to me.
Oh wow. That's awesome. I didn't know that. But wow. So we'll get right into it. Obviously, I guess the biggest storyline with Virginia so far, it was kind of an up and down start to its season, playing a really good Richmond squad early in the year, as part of non-conference play. But last four games have been all wins, including some top 10 victories over Notre Dame and Duke. How has that kind of flip of the tide been, and what's the philosophy been during that four-game win streak?
Yeah, I've often said the season is a race to improve, and well, boy, we had a long way to run and race this year, didn't we? The way we started the season. And it's not to take anything away from the opponents who beat us. You know, Richmond has proven to be a fantastic program this year. We just didn't play good defense, and we didn't make saves that day. And we gave up way too many goals. Our offense gave us a chance, but our defense failed us that day. As the season went then progressed, you know, a collapse against Hopkins in the second half. You know, we're up by 5 goals at halftime, 4 goals into going into the fourth quarter, and we just don't make the saves we need. We don't play the defense we need to play. And so just kind of growing and learning. The biggest difference is we've got double digit saves 4 times the last 4 games. And we've won those 4 games. And that's not just the goalie, though. Jake Merrick, our transfer from the Air Force Academy. Well, I shouldn't say transfer. He graduated from the Air Force Academy, and now he's serving through the military, earning a master's in nursing here at the University of Virginia's nursing school. He is making a lot more saves. What he does really well too is he steals passes around the goal. If you throw a pass to near the crease, maybe to somebody behind the goal, you think, okay, I'll throw it to him. He'll be the feeder. Jake's got a really great knack of picking that ball off and surprising you, throwing a monkey wrench in your plans. And so he's playing much better. And he's growing more comfortable with the defense in front of him. And then vice versa. Now the defense is comfortable with him. So we know, hey, we got to take away this shot, but we're okay giving up this lower angle shot down the alley. That wasn't happening earlier in the year. So there's a confidence that's going both directions. So it's, I think our offense has been playing at a high level the whole year. What I'm really seeing a difference is the goalie and the defensive play, and that's really helped transform us. And, you know, keeping Notre Dame to 9 and Duke to 10 has been the key.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think you can really argue against your defense winning you the game last week. I mean, your best player, one of your two best players, obviously the Millen brothers, both in their own right, tied right now on points. But, you know, McCabe held to 0 points against Duke last week. So, you know, way down from his usual outings. What kind of changed last week? What wasn't really working on the offensive end to get him involved? And, you know, what did you guys kind of focus on in practice this week to kind of get him back to where he needs to be?
Yeah, there's a different things you can do to get a great player on track. We can have some starters, meaning we don't run set plays necessarily, but initiating an offense, what's the first look out of it? Maybe that's 2 or 3 guys are doing something special, some sort of an action. You know, can we get somebody like McCabe going? So, you know, this weekend, could we put McCabe in the crease to start a play? Like, well, you'd be like, he's not a crease player. Well, maybe start him in the crease and then have him exchange out. Does he lose his matchup because his matchup was responsible for the slide? Can we sue some picks or double staggered picks to get McCabe going? Do we bring him out of the midfield? We've been bringing him out of midfield quite a bit. Do we do more of that? Do we make him more exclusively a midfielder and to change the matchups? Now, instead of Figueres, maybe he's got a long stick midi guarding him. Yeah. So, you know, it's bottom line at Duke, he's got Charlie Johnson. Charlie Johnson's a great defender, did really, really well. McCabe had a couple shots saved. But what's great about it is I don't have McCabe in my office going, Coach, what's wrong with me? The confidence is there. I don't have McCabe in my office going, Coach, this isn't right. He recognizes that if he's going to draw all the attention he's drawing, then that liberates Joey Terenzi and Ryan Dunkel to do their thing and dodge and no one slides. It's a balance, and it probably also helps too. And his brother, you know, his kid brother, you know, puts up 6 points, you know, while he's struggling, you know, and so he's, McCabe's a team player and he can recognize it, but yeah, it is on the coaches. What can we do to get something different, change the matchup? Cause he's always getting the number one defender and, put him in different spaces that benefit him in the offense. And we'll work on that this week.
You mentioned Brendan, obviously, freshman sensation has been really, really good piece for your squad. I remember last season we were talking about that kind of three-headed monster for your offense, and a fourth one been added to that with Brendan. Virginia's had a lot of good attackers and midfielders offensively since you've been there. Who does he remind you of, and what does he bring to UVA's offense?
Great question. Lofty analogy. Connor Schellenberger. That's saying a lot, I know. A four-time first-team All-American. But I have to remind myself what Brendan's doing. This is his first year here. Connor Schellenberger redshirted. Now that's kind of lost in antiquity, in a sense, because that year got wiped out anyways. If Connor had played the six games we played in 2020 before COVID shut down the year, he would have got that year back anyways. We were just dumb enough to not get those six games in. So Connor's record is starting a year and a half into his experience as a University of Virginia student athlete, whereas Brendan's doing this, 6 months into being a college student. And his poise, his vision, it reminds me a lot of Connor. And I hate to say it this way, but I'm almost starting to take him for granted, like I did Connor, in terms of, oh, that guy's open, he'll find him. Yep, the ball's right in the stick, right where the shooter wants it. Brendan is doing the same thing. He is finding the guy, he's making good decisions, and he's allowing us to be creative on offense in those in-betweens when it's not pure 6v6. Do we push transition or do we not? Do we settle it? His presence is helping us being both creative without being undisciplined. Last year, we were making a lot of turnovers in those in-between gray areas, making bad decisions, throwing balls away, and all of a sudden we're playing more defense. This year, those risks, calculated risks, we're at a much higher rate of making good decisions and making good plays in those scenarios. And I give Brendan a lot of credit there. Like Connor Schellenberger did for us for years as our quarterback.
Yeah, coach, on paper, I mean, a pretty close matchup. You guys have the same amount of face-offs won this year. And, I really look at the fact that you guys have forced the third most takeaways in the nation. Your defensive unit, obviously very strong. We saw that last week. But Syracuse, a little bit different. They have the second lowest turnover rate in the nation. So how do
Oh,
you see
wow.
your team kind of having to work to force turnovers extra hard this week?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point. How do possessions end? Is it a save? Is it a turnover? Is it a unforced turnover, unforced error, or is it a goal? And we've obviously felt like as a defense we've had to create more turnovers because we weren't getting the saves that we needed. But now we are. So does that mean we can be a bit more patient and take less risks? Number eight's going to take risks. Hopper's going to throw over the head checks, and I can try to contain it, but we recruited, a cheetah. Cheetahs run fast. Cheetahs do what cheetahs do, right? You're not going to change them. You can adapt them a little bit, and so that's interesting. I didn't realize they were the second best team in the country for turnovers, and so it really does highlight, can we force them into shots that can be saves. Now, sometimes they'll go in. We've seen it. You've seen it. You guys know better. Like, oh, how did Leo just put that ball in? That second goal against UNC was ridiculous. No angle. So those are going to go in, and the lights are going to go on and off, and it's going to get loud, and it's going to be a big party, and it's going to feel like you just scored five goals. And so we've been talking to our team, like, look, it's a goal. It's one goal. Look at each other, magnet, magnet, magnet. But anyway, back to your question. Yeah, that's the key, is that's what I'm so impressed with this offense. I didn't realize they were that good with the turnover ratio. I just am really impressed with their shooting and decision making. I don't
It
know.
might not. It might not feel like it when they play outside. I mean, it feels like it's two different teams at this point. So,
Doesn't it? I mean, it's unbelievable the difference. Can you t call me? Can you tell me right now that, oh, the dome just went offline, for some reason? We're playing a Cicero North Syracuse High School, awesome. But our guys do want that experience. It's a special experience. I asked that a couple of days ago, like, all right, who here has played in the dome? And it's funny because we play there every other year. But when I asked that question, I got a bunch of first years and second years. No, and then I got a couple third years who didn't make the travel roster. I'm like, geez, like only a third of my team's been in the dome. None of us. I have a lot of experience there. It's an incredible experience, but yeah, you got to quickly, I wish there was a shake of experience to drink, so but you got to be in it to know it.
Yeah.
Five teams have tried this year to win a game in the dome, and all five have lost.
And given up a lot of goals. I know Boston came in that first game and with a 10-man ride, got some possessions back, and but yeah, I mean, good defenses are going up there. I mean, Duke doesn't give up a lot of goals, and they give up 16. Georgetown usually plays really good defense and have a great goalie, and they give up 18. And so, as a coaching staff, we talk about it a lot. Like, we get into that weird hypothetical the day before the game, and there's nothing else to talk about. All right, how do we win this game? What's the score? When you're playing Notre Dame, it's like we're not winning this game 16-15 because they're really hard to score goals against. Can we get to 11 or 12, and we'll try to keep them to 9 or 10, but we're not scoring more than 12 goals against Notre Dame. And then when you get ready for the Syracuse game, it's like, offense, can you get to 15 or 16? I'm not sure we're keeping them to 9.
I expect the atmosphere to be even bigger on Saturday. Syracuse is honoring Coach Desko, joining the Ring of Honor. What was it like coaching against him, and what does he mean to the lacrosse world?
I think he's an exemplary representative of coaching, period. Whether it's lacrosse or any other sport, I found him a consummate professional. John Desko always treated people really well. He makes the athlete, the coach, the opposing coach, feel important, respected. Whenever I coached against him, I didn't see someone berating officials. Of course, we worked the officials, but I always with respect. I felt like after the game, the handshake, whether he was congratulating me or, a little consolation, consoling, I always felt like he just was gonna make sure the relationship was more important than the outcome. And I just, and what a winner. I mean, all the guy did was win as a player, as an assistant, as a head. I'm so happy that Syracuse University is honoring one of the very, very best and just an incredible human being.
Coach, I just want to go back to this Duke game because I saw something on Twitter that you guys had won four national championships in between regular season wins against Duke. How big of a win was that for your program? Can you just walk me through how big that game was?
Up until this past Saturday, I was telling people I've won more national championship games as a coaches than I have wins over Duke. Try to explain that one. First of all, I want to give Coach Danowski, and I mean, that's incredible. An ACC opponent, an ACC rival. We're not talking about Southwest Missouri State. We're not talking about some non-conference opponent you haven't lost to in 20 years. You're talking about a conference opponent who competes at a high level, who has their own tremendous history. Like to do that for that long, that's incredible by Coach Danowski and his teams. And so that's the most important thing I want to make sure we share. I mean, it was bound to happen at some point, right? At some point, and I've taken better teams to Durham, North Carolina. But this was the right team. This was the right team to do it, so it was a I guess I don't focus on it too much, but people told me afterwards, like, Lars, you were still an assistant coach the last time this happened. McCabe Millen wasn't even a month old. I'm like, really? Yeah, I guess that's a long time. I'm really happy. It's funny because you commit to Virginia as a high school recruit and you show up as a first year, and now you accept all that responsibility. You accept that 800-pound gorilla, even though you'd had nothing to do with those games, but you do. You part of the legacy, the positives and the negatives. And so for this group to end that streak, I'm thrilled for them.
Obviously, Syracuse coming off that game against North Carolina, Joey Spolina had 0 points. But when you're going up an attackman like Joey Spolina, what are the difficulties going against him, and how do you even try to stop a guy like that?
Well, we try with a guy named John Schroeder. The problem is if you focus too much on Joey and then don't have a six-man defense, but you're playing a five-man defense. If you're trying to make this five versus five, there's just too much other talent out there. And but if you don't focus enough on Joey, I mean the great things about Joey is he's a bulldozer of a Dodger. And but he has vision and he has great hands. It reminds me of Dylan Malloy, the man I was lucky enough to coach at Brown, who won the Tewarton. Dylan had this the bulldozer dodging ability, but the hands, it was really about the hands, the quickness of the release of the shot or the feed to the crease when he did draw the slide. What Joey does well too is off ball. Watching him when they've put him in the crease or put him on a wing, and now he's got his hands free at 8 yards. We always think of Joey as the quarterback behind the goal running the show, and he's phenomenal at that. But where he's also dangerous is floating around and catching balls and shooting as well. So just as we need to get Mecate Millen going, I wouldn't be surprised if they do that with Joey Spallina, put him in different spots. Just because the more the ball's in his stick, the better for Syracuse.
Yeah, Coach, we walked through the takeaway versus turnover matchup, but in your eyes, what do you think Virginia needs to do to win on Saturday? How does that happen?
It's the transition. Can we get transition while avoiding allowing transition? And we've been allowing too much transition. If you watch the Duke game, Duke has a bunch of high bouncers that go over the cage on 4-on-3 fast breaks. And we were just fortunate on the way their transition shooting went for most of the day. We can't give up that much transition to Syracuse. I know it inevitably happens. Again, 2 years ago, Virginia at Syracuse in the dome, 15 transition goals. That's a ridiculous number. That's a ridiculous number. I mean, if there's seven or eight transition goals in a lacrosse game, you're like, whoa, that was fun. That was cool. They got up and down. Double that in 2024. And so it's part of the nature of when these two teams play that it's going to be fast and its goalies are going to make saves and get the ball up and out. And Dwan from Syracuse is going to be running, hunting for more goals. It's just kind of the nature of the game, but I think that's a big key is can we get the transition while can we rotate back and take away some of those transitions? Syracuse is going to score their 6v6 goals. They're going to get theirs. But can we keep their transition goals from seven down to like one or two? Maybe that's wishful thinking.
Coach, thank you so much. Really appreciate you taking the time as always, and good luck on Saturday.
Thank you, Griffin. Thank you, Josh. I really enjoyed the time.
Big thanks to Coach Tiffany for taking the time. Always appreciate him joining the Ostrom Avenue podcast, one of our favorite guests that we bring on every single year. Again, Syracuse and Virginia get going at 4. McClurg Remodeling countdown to face-off starts at 3:30. Double overtime up until 7:30. I'll be on that one. Given all the hot takes, maybe Joey Spallina breaks the record, and I'll get to talk about how much that doesn't matter because Joey will have to win the national championship to cement his legacy. But maybe not. Who knows? So that one, make sure to tune in for that game on Saturday. Also, following the men's game on Saturday, right after the double overtime, we'll be throwing it over to our coverage of the spring game. Syracuse football is in the dome for the first time in 2026. That will be a fun one. We'll have a kind of like a talk show-esque during that game with our good friends Ben Chadwick, Nick Evans, Dan Papillo, and Adam Hipsky on that one. Should be a really fun way to see what's going on with the Syracuse football team that I guess we haven't been talking as much about as we normally do during the offseason just because of everything that's going on with the athletic director and the basketball team and both lacrosse teams doing really, really well. Obviously, unfortunate news about Calvin Russell with an alleged Achilles tear, a lower leg injury. So that will be something to note who steps up in that wide receivers core. I remember last year's spring game was kind of fun. Fran kind of just like was making the rules up on the fly, coaching both teams on the field. So that will be interesting as we will have full coverage for that. Make sure to listen to previous episodes of the Ostrom Avenue podcast wherever you get your podcasts or at WAER.org.
Until next week, it's Josh and Griffin. We will catch you then.